You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from WHYY. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, including Brian Neary, Newmark Knight Frank, Mary Pat Kessler, Sabre Systems, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Patrick Riley, Bartlett Group, Josh Silverbauer, Gruen Bleen, and Denise Lance at Ten of Health. Peter, can you give us a rundown on who we have that we're going to be speaking with today?
Yes, sir. We have Dr. Mike Middleman, President, Salus University, Mike Raich, Managing Director, Allen & Gerritsen, Michael Risage, Founder and CEO of Boldon Technology, and Michael Harpster, Special Agent in Charge, Philadelphia Field Division of the FBI.
Good. Let's get to our first guest, Dr. Mike Middleman, President of Salus University. Dr. Middleman, what is Salus University?
Salus University is a health science professions university. We're in Elkins Park. We were born out of the Pennsylvania College of Optometry. We have about 1,200 students. I've got about 350 staff members to include faculty and adjuncts.
How about that? Where were you from originally?
I grew up in Long Beach, New York.
And how many brothers and sisters?
I've got one younger sister.
Uh-huh. And when you were 10 years old, I understand that you would go to work with your dad. What was your dad doing and what were you doing?
My dad owned a men's clothing store, and I would work in his store. I'd take care of customers as they'd come in. I'd sell them pants, suits, shirts, underwear, whatever.
Wait a minute, you're 10 years old and you're working in your father's clothing store and you're helping service customers at 10?
That's right.
Who were some of the customers that you serviced?
Well, his store was in Manhattan, and so Kirk Douglas walked in the store once. Ed Sullivan walked in the store. All sorts of folks who were involved in show business.
And did you serve these guys?
I did.
Uh-huh. Weren't you nervous serving these stars?
You know, it didn't dawn on me who they were, really, at that time.
Uh-huh. So you had some experience working retail. I'm wondering, what did you learn serving those customers, starting at the age of 10, working in your dad's men's clothing store in Manhattan, that has anything to do with being the president of Salus University?
That's a great question. My dad would know I would get bored, because retail is bored, so he told me, look, you don't want to do this the rest of your life. If you want to get out of this, you need to go to school, and you need to do something that's meaningful.
Mm-hmm. And what was that? What did that look like to you?
Well, it was, first of all, he drove a hard work ethic. I needed to get things done right, get them done right the first time. And part of, I think, taking care of the customers started instilling taking care of people to me a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you described in the green room that there was an exactness. I mean, your grandfather was a tailor as well, so there's a lot of exactness in all that. What did you enjoy about helping customers getting it right?
It was thrilling to watch them, you know, the thing fit, and my dad would go in there and fix their pants, and it would all be perfect.
What's that have to do with Salus University?
Well, Salus University is a health science professions university. We've got to get it right. We have to teach our students that there really is no room for error. They've got to be excellent at everything that they do.
You're a doctor? What kind of doctor are
you? I'm an optometrist by training.
So where's exactness fit into that?
Everything is about that. Everything's about numbers. Everything's about ensuring that the eye health is right. You know, it's a very small organ in our body, but there's a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make sure that when we're measured doing a visual analysis, we get that right.
Mm-hmm.
How are you? An eye health check.
And you mentioned when you were a kid, you started a business. It was a photography business, interestingly enough, considering the eyes. How old were you when you started that business? Did you start it alone, and what was your role in that business?
I started it with my best friend, Larry, and mm-hmm. we started taking pictures in school. The sports teams needed pictures for the local newspapers and such. So I absolutely enjoyed going out there. I absolutely enjoyed working in the dark room and getting the pictures just right.
And what was your role in that partnership? What did Larry do different than
you? Larry was the guy who made it work. He was mm-hmm. the executor. I was the guy with the ideas.
What's that have to do with being the president of Salus University?
It's about setting the vision. It's about looking forward and seeing where can we go.
Interesting. We keep on talking about photography, eyes, and vision. You're all about photography, eyes, and vision, aren't you? Who's got the next question?
Mike, you mentioned that your grandfather came from Yugoslavia and that education's a valued, very valued trait in your family. What do you see in terms of the students at Salus? Are they first-generation Americans, and how important is that to you?
We have a mix at Salus. It's fairly diverse. I think most of them are not first-generation Americans. They're probably second or third. But it's extremely important to me. You know, my role now is to give back and to ensure that I
am helping. Where do you think you get your vision from?
Was that mom or dad, or was that
from my passion comes a lot from my mom, who was very demanding. She would be intolerant of my coming home with anything less than an A. But also, they would push me to do better than I would always do. They'd always have me competing with my best friend, who was also a brilliant guy. And, you know, we were like brothers. Mm-hmm. So it was fabulous.
Next question.
Dr. Mendelman, do you talk to the kids on campus?
Oh, I always talk to the kids. My energy comes from walking around the campus, seeing what they're doing, watching them study, and just kind of interacting with them.
Wait. It says here you're the president. Don't you get to sit in your fancy office and drink cocktails and stuff?
No.
I have a follow-up, though. If I were to come on campus and survey some of the kids, how would they describe you?
They describe me as being interactive, approachable, sometimes being almost one of them sometimes. I like being a student. I'll plot myself in the classrooms oftentimes.
What do you mean you like being a student? What are you talking about?
I think life should be continually learning. I'm a student today. I'm enrolled in an MBA program myself. Just because I'm trying to figure out a little bit more about what goes on in the university finances.
Wow. I mean, you're the president of this university. Should you be admitting that you're, like, constantly learning new stuff? Aren't you supposed to be the genius?
Absolutely not. I'm surrounded by geniuses, but my job is to give my folks the tools they need to do their job. My job is to be the visionary, but also to ensure that they're better than I am.
Wow. I never heard this.
That's my
job. Denise?
Do you think your mom's high standards have impacted how you operate there with the university?
Oh, absolutely. There's a good side of that and there's a bad side of that, because my mom has taught me to be very direct. So what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. I don't sugarcoat things. I tend to be very direct. I tend to tell folks who are working with me, these are my expectations, and how do I help
Excellent.
You get there?
So, Dr. Mendelman, you are describing a lot of different ways that you've helped expand things. You know, you take things to the next level. What are you doing at the university? You said you were born out of ophthalmology, and now it's a much larger endeavor.
I was born out of optometry.
Pardon me.
That's okay. And, we have many other professions. We have occupational therapy. We've got physician assistants. We've got speech and language pathology. I really want to see them integrating the way they work. I want to see them communicating better. Healthcare is about taking care of the person, and we're surrounded by technology today. One of the things I tell students at orientation and graduation is, look, you're going to be surrounded by all this technology. That's great, but I want you to be looking in your patient's eyes, and I want you to be taking care of them, because that's why we do what we do.
Like you did with your customers, your dad's customers in the shop?
Way back when, yeah. The shirts fit, but it's more important that my patients leave healthy and the glasses are exacting.
So it's interesting. So we're talking bedside manner. You're helping them before they actually interact with patients. Why is that important to you? Bedside manner. Why?
Because I had a Navy career in the middle here, and my role there, it was running health systems and taking care of patients, and it's all about making sure that the people have what they need to do their own job. So.
And that usually when they're in the doctor's office, there's a problem. So, you know, that they're compassionate and they show empathy.
Absolutely.
And you see, you were in the, you had a military career prior to this. What was the military career?
I spent 33 years in the Navy.
And what'd you learn there that has anything to do with running a university?
It's all about leadership. It's all about taking care of people. I'm a real student of servant leadership. Everyone thinks because I'm a naval officer, I'm an autocratic leader. I'm a consensus builder. And really, I really come into work every day trying to figure out how do I get us what we need so that my faculty and my students have everything that they need. And it's all about building consensus and bringing ideas around the table that are actionable.
Huh. Well, you mentioned Larry's parents. Your best friend's parents had a pretty profound effect on you. What was that?
They did. I spent a lot of time at my best friend's house with the Schwartzes. And they taught me about honesty and integrity. they taught me about just doing the right thing. And it was just a fantastic role model. Matter of fact, my first real job that I made money when I was in college, I was working for them. He was at Friendship Dairies, Friendship Cottage Cheese, and so I was four in the morning going there delivering cottage cheese.
What is the website address of this of Salus University?
We are salus.edu.
Let me have that one more time.
Salus.edu, SALUS.edu.
We've been speaking with Dr. Mike Middleman, president of Salus University, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Back in a moment, right after this break. And your name and organization is?
Mattioni Limited, and we are a law firm.
And your first name is?
It's Eugene.
Eugene Mattioni. And I understand that you're one of 10 kids, and you started this law firm. There were five brothers that started this law firm. How many years ago did this get started?
About 50 years ago.
About 50 years ago. If you wanted to retire now financially, could you?
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you retire?
As long as I can help anyone solve their problem, I will continue to work as an attorney. I will drop at my desk first.
What kind of problems do you like solving with people?
I like all different kinds of problems, from personal problems, from problems involving whether they're injury, companies that I have dealt with in the maritime that have damaged cargo or damaged goods. And we represent many terminal operators on the Delaware River. So if I can help them solve a problem that they have, we will continue to do that.
So you really enjoy, whether it's a business or a personal issue, getting involved with helping solve the problem?
Yes. I had a woman come to me recently about an employment litigation on a long-term disability claim. And all it required was a reassessment of what her job was, her description of the nature of the work.
It sounds to me like when you're sitting down with your clients, whether it's a maritime issue, whether it's something with aviation, whether it's a business issue, whether it's you're really handling a diverse variety of problems. But to you, they're all the same because you're really analyzing them for what they really are. And you're telling me you would drop at your desk because you really enjoy what you're doing?
Yes.
It's not about the money.
Not about the
money.
What's
the website address of your organization?
Mattioni.com.
How do you spell that?
Mattioni.
.com. It's interesting. It's fascinating what you're doing for a living. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. And your name and company is?
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch.
And Peter, what do you do for a living?
Well, our group provides wealth management and retirement planning services for companies, their employees, and executives.
So you're helping companies, their employees, and their executives with their wealth management. And what kind of stuff does that encompass?
Well, we focus on goals-based wealth management, which really means trying to find what is most important to people about their money and then proposing solutions to meet their needs.
When you say helping them with their money, so they're planning for marriage and they're planning for anniversaries and weddings.
Educating children, retirement, helping
the whole life
parents, helping
money.
Children.
What's the website address of this organization?
That is ml.com.
And let me have your name one more time.
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch.
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch. And the website address one last time?
Is ml.com.
ml.com. And this has been your business spotlight. We'll be back in a moment. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Mike Raich, who's the managing director of an organization known as Allen & Gerritsen. What is Allen & Gerritsen?
We are a full-service marketing and advertising agency.
Uh-huh. How large or how small is this organization?
We are 50 employees here in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
And about 120 employees in our Boston office.
All right. I understand when you were about 10 years old, you remembered hanging out with your dad watching TV. Tell us a little bit about that.
I remember sitting on the couch with my dad, probably 10 years old, watching the Eagles, watching football, and I was also drawn to ads and would love to talk about ads.
Was your dad in the advertising business?
He was not. He was an electrical engineer. His father was an electrical engineer.
Uh-huh. So, and you mentioned earlier when we were speaking that not only were you watching the ads, but you would tell your father certain things about the ads. What was that?
Just, you know, I had my own ideas. You know, I remember telling him, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was a an ad and you were just watching a field and all of a sudden the ad suddenly turned and it was completely about something else. And then a couple years later, the Energizer Bunny campaign that I'm sure everybody's familiar with launched.
So you were seeing,
that was my idea.
So you were seeing ideas. You've always been an idea guy, seeing the way ads, whether it's print or radio or television or better ways to do things, better ways to communicate things. So I get that. I can understand why that would put you in the advertising marketing business. Tell me about what kind of sports did you play as a kid?
I played soccer, tennis, basketball.
Mm-hmm. Were you the best athlete on the team?
I was not the best athlete.
Uh-huh. So how'd you manage to survive? What was that all about?
You just really have to learn how to gain a competitive advantage when you are not as athletically gifted as everyone else.
Uh-huh, Josh.
So you were very into at 10 creating and the ideas part. Now you're in, you know, a management role. How do you bring that creativity and that, you know, those ideas to your role now?
I think it's about, you know, fostering an environment where you're bringing talent and people to the table that are the very best at what they do, have very diverse perspectives on what makes a great idea, and really letting them, creating an environment that allows them to bring their level of creativity to the table.
Brian?
And looping that back with your athletic career and being higher than a role player but not the best athlete, how does that manifest itself in your team?
I'm just a big believer that, and I saw this in a leadership video a couple weeks ago, that at the end of the day, you know, when you're in a leadership position, it's not necessarily about being in charge. It's about taking care of the people that are in your charge. And I think that's something that you have to constantly remind yourself, and something that I'm continuing to learn as a leader.
Pat?
And you said during the green room that your sister shaped your worldview in a unique way. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what kind of impact she's had on your life?
Yeah.
Sure. Like I said earlier, I have an older sister. She's 2 years older than me, Amanda. She grew up and to this day still has some significant learning disabilities as a part of her life. And, you know, to me, she was my sister and we had a normal brother and sister relationship. But as I got older, I began to realize, you know, some of the adversity and struggles that she faced, that I didn't have to face. And, you know, I think that that's really helped me have a perspective, particularly from a leadership standpoint, on the notion of empathy and how important empathy is.
Mike,
how you lead.
You shared that your mom was a nurse, but not in a hospital, in a drug and alcohol rehabilitation center. Did you gain any of that empathy and understanding from her, or did that come from a different place?
Well, growing up, I gained that I shouldn't drink or do drugs when I was in high school.
Good lesson.
I think having a nurse as a mom, I mean, that's, you know, having empathy and caring for people was.
But what's
core
that
part
have to do with building a business? I'm trying to figure out. You're in the advertising business. You're the head of the business. Where's the empathy come in? Why is that important?
I think it's really about, you know, creating an environment that isn't necessarily about what your perspective is, and it's about fostering an environment where people can feel free to bring their own talents to the table.
Now I understand, Denise.
You also said that your mom told you that you could be anything. So how does that impact the work that you do with your clients?
Yeah, I mean, I feel really lucky. I mean, I had parents that, again, my dad was an electrical engineer. He could have, when we were watching those ads, you know, tried to push me in a different direction, and he didn't, you know. So, you know, I grew up in an environment that was all about, you know, having the opportunity to do what you love. That's the environment that I try to create at work. And it's also, you know, as a parent of a now 8-year-old daughter, it's a lesson that I'm, you know, trying to apply to her. You know, I want to make sure that.
Mike, I want to go back to you and your dad sitting on the couch. Your grandfather and your father are both engineers, very exacting, yet your father encouraged this creative side out of you. What do you think motivated him to see that in you and let that flourish?
I think as a parent, he just understood that, you know, going back to my quote, it wasn't about my parents being in charge. It was about them understanding that they were responsible for my happiness and my success, and not pushing what they wanted on me. So, you know, while he didn't always understand it, he loved that I loved it,
About sports and different things, about differentiating yourself and creating. You use the word edge in the green room, and then you're talking about empathy. And I get how it affects leadership, but how does that help you be better for your clients in terms of how you go about picking the advertising approach?
Yeah, one of the things that we really believe in is this notion of brands having what we describe as conviction and having a real stance and point of view on the world and in culture, and how important that is today. And that requires an edge, because it requires brands to have a perspective on the world that not everybody agrees with.
Yeah, but you're good at that. You were seeing commercials the way they should be at the age of 10, Pat.
And when you saw those commercials when you were 10, what was it? What was the thing about the ads that really stuck out to you and made you like that more than the football game, so to speak?
I think, you know, storytelling, having a surprising perspective, and just drawn to ideas that are different than what you would expect.
Mary Pat?
Mike, if I were to talk to some of your clients, like the ones you've had for the longest, how would they describe the way your firm works with their company for the common goal of this edge type of brand?
I think it requires being brutally honest with one another. I think, you know, conviction also applies to how we have to talk to CMOs and CEOs. You know, I think there are many times they're, you know, within organizations and they have a lot of people telling them what they think they want to hear. Our job is to tell them what they need to hear.
Josh? You mentioned, being on sports teams, but what creative outlets did you have growing up?
Again, for me, it was all about ideas. You know, I wasn't the best artist, but I took a lot of art classes. I tried to, in school, even though I wasn't a great artist, I wasn't a great writer. It was very much about ideas for me. So I just tried to participate in things that had to do with art as an outlet.
Mike, can I shift that a little? Herb was talking about the things you see. There seems to be an intuitive ability that you've had from a young age, that you see things that others don't see in certain areas. Where did that come from? When did that show up? Advertising for sure, but yeah, parents, mentor?
Yeah, how young were you when that was showing up? Where did it come from?
I think that definitely came from my mom, you know, just kind of this innate.
Your mom's a nurse.
Yeah, but I mean, the life of a nurse is about kind of understanding your patients and really understanding what they're thinking and what they're feeling. And, I think you just have to have an intuition in that role, and you absolutely have to have an intuition in the business as I am, because it's all about what understanding your audience and what people are thinking and feeling.
Well, how do you go about understanding your audience?
Part of it is gut, and part of it is, spending a lot of time doing research, you know, interviews, and really trying to find that one nugget of insight that's going to inspire something amazing.
What do you do when your gut and the facts are incongruent? How do you make the call?
I typically go with my gut. I think you have to have the confidence that, you know, the thing that you felt at the very onset, hopefully is validated. You know,
the conviction?
Yes, that conviction is hopefully validated through research. But at the end of the day, I find that more often than not, your gut is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. What's a website address of this organization known as Allen & Gerritsen?
A-G.com.
Let me have that one more time.
A-G.com.
We've been speaking with Mike Raich, who's the Managing Director of Allen & Gerritsen, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Brian Neary, Newmark Knight Frank, Mary Pat Kessler, Sabre Systems, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Patrick Riley, Bartlett Group, Josh Silverbauer, Gruen Bleen, and Denise Lance, Attentive Health. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We will be back in a moment right after this break. And your name is?
Ethan Milrod.
And the name of the organization?
GoTo.
GoTo. Why is the name of the organization GoTo, and what do you do for your clients?
Well, we act as a single technology source for our clients, kind of like the go-to guys and girls.
And what kind of technologies do you help your clients with?
We provide our clients with the full range of technology solutions, anything that is voice, data, or video related.
Why would they need one source in order to do this stuff?
Well, we found that over time, clients have lots of so-called go-to vendors, but they're truly generally not go-to vendors. They're biased, they're subjective, and oftentimes business owners are pulling their hair out trying to bring technology together. They really need a company to bring it all together for them.
So because there's so many different competing kinds of technologies and conflicting technologies, and if you do this, you can't do that, you're telling me you'd like to come in as an unbiased source and try to give them a hand with that stuff.
Well, we want to let business owners focus on their business and what's important to them and not have to worry about the technology. We'll bring that all together.
Are there times that you come in as a consultant, as a second opinion, rather than the guy that's actually selling them the stuff or integrating the stuff?
Always, always. We have to understand their business so we can apply technology, not just throw technology up against the wall to see what sticks.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't your job to make the most money where you want to sell them whatever you can make the most money on?
We're never thinking about what we're going to make the most money for on. We're thinking about what's the best fit for the client. The money comes later on.
So you're concerned about the relationship with the client.
Exactly.
So I guess the other problem is, like, there's so many emerging technologies. You got to be on top of all these tech. Do you have any partners in the business?
I have two business partners. Yeah,
figures, because this is not something you could be able to do yourself. There's so many changing technologies. What's the website address of this organization?
It's GoToTech. That's GoTech.com.
Let me have that one more time.
GoToTech.com.
Excellent. And your name is?
Ethan Milrod.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Eileen Conley Robbins.
And Eileen, what organization are you with?
I am the CEO of the Power of Professional Women.
Mm-hmm. What is the Power of Professional Women?
It's a not-for-profit organization focused on the need for diversity all over in companies and organizations, and also to focus on helping the next generation of leaders.
Tell us a little bit more about that. What do you mean?
Well, there's 10,000 baby boomers every day eligible for retirement. Mm-hmm. And most companies do not have the experienced leadership in their pipeline to fill positions. So we are offering workshops mm-hmm. and programs very reasonable for companies and individuals.
And how do you help companies and individuals? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. I've met with, over 100 companies and organizations to find out what do they need. Mm-hmm. What can we do for them? We customize programs for them. We have networking organization in the Union League. Mm-hmm. We do something every month at the Union League. And these companies love it because it shows their commitment to diversity.
So you're helping businesses find people and people find businesses. And what kind of people are you helping?
We're connecting. We have an emerging leader circle that are meeting people. We bring trailblazers from our region in to speak to them. We've connected them to do business together. Mm-hmm. It helps everybody. It's
a
win-win.
What do you enjoy about this?
I love it. I see good leaders become great leaders. Mm-hmm. I see businesses getting more customers. I see trailblazers helping that they forgot about maybe helping before, but now they remember and they do it because we need to share our experiences.
This is really a passion of yours, isn't it?
It is. I'm very passionate about it.
Yeah, I can tell. It's like 24/7, it seems.
More than that.
Uh-huh. What's the website address of this organization?
Powerw.org.
Let me have that one more time.
Powerw.org.
Excellent. This is Herb Cohen, and this has been your Business Spotlight. Here we go. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Mike Risich, who's the founder and CEO of an organization known as Bolt On Technology. Mike, what is Bolt On Technology? What are you guys doing?
Bolt On Technology is a software company that automates manual processes found in the automotive aftermarket mechanical.
Uh-huh. And where are you from originally?
I am from Bensalem, Pennsylvania.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have one younger brother.
All right. And tell us about how young were you when you started making money?
I started my first business when I was 14.
Doing what?
I was a DJ.
A DJ. And this was at parties and weddings and dances and stuff like that?
Later became that, but originally we went after schools and started uh-huh. doing school dances.
All righty. But at 14 in Pennsylvania, you're not allowed to drive. How'd you get to these events?
I paid my father.
Uh-huh. Why'd you pay your father?
So he would be on time.
Uh-huh. So you were anticipating and planning way back at the age of 14. What would you learn from DJing these high school dances or these school dances that eventually had anything to do with your building a successful business known as Bolt On Technology?
It takes perseverance, it takes guts. You got to go out, put yourself out there. One of the things I learned about doing the schools was that it created a recurring income.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was great interest in that because rather than trying to find the next bride, mm-hmm. I just had to show back up at the same school.
Gotcha. And tell us a little bit. You mentioned that you had worked for a vending company, and something happened there. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, in my 20s, I was running a route, filling machines, and had a little bit of a fight with my boss, who basically said that, you know, this is the end of your career. You know, this is what you're going to be.
And how did that make you feel?
I didn't take that so well.
What do you mean?
I kind of showed him, you know. I put myself through school. Mm-hmm. I worked full-time mm-hmm. for him, so I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning filling machines. Mm-hmm. By noon, I was in school until mm-hmm. 7 p.m., mm-hmm. finished, and started my career in technology.
Uh-huh. Who's got the next question here?
So, Mike, you had a whole bunch of different ways of making money when you were young, and you liked making money, but tell us why you like making money. Was it about the challenge or the money or what?
It was definitely about the challenge. I wanted to see, you know, how much I could accumulate when it came to customers and taking care of them. I mean, I mowed lawns, I raked leaves, you name it. My father liked to say I could smell a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Josh?
You mentioned in the green room that your younger brother was 11 years younger than you. What was that like growing up with a younger brother so young?
It was a shock. I can remember being younger myself and wanting a sibling. And then when he came around, it was very interesting. I like to say that we're both only children. You know, I left home at 18, and he was only 7.
And how do you bring that experience into where you are now?
Yeah,
how'd
that make you feel?
There's a lot around the separation there that happened between he and I. And so, you know, the team
piece. Wait. You're the older brother going to college or going off leading your life, and you felt bad leaving your little brother behind?
Yeah, I would say I was a role model to him. You know, he was constantly looking up to me. You could see that.
So you've got pretty bonded relationships with other guys, huh? All right, so how's that affecting the building of your business?
Yeah, we're very proud that we don't lose any customers, but more importantly, we don't lose any team members. Bolton's not an easy place to get hired, but once you're on board, we really, really want to keep you, and we do almost everything possible to do that.
So that has something to do with your relationship, with your ability to have close relationships with other guys, like your brother. That's interesting, because I thought business was all about blood and guts, and you sue people, and that's what I always hear, but you're talking about long-term relationships where you don't want to lose people.
No, I am the direct opposite. I want to invest in them, in their own skills and their own growth, so that they can be the best that they can be.
Uh-huh.
And then in result, I'm going to receive some of the rewards.
Mary
of
Pat, what do you think?
I'm just thinking about, you know, the company that you have, and because you had a lot of different businesses. What compelled you to start Bolt? Like, what about the technology? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so in the late 90s, I was teaching some Microsoft Office classes, and a shop owner took my class. He started explaining to me the technology he used to run his business, but that it could not do an Excel chart that I just taught him. And so I just began going to his shop and started helping him and understanding what were some of the challenges that he was facing. It's a very manual process business. Mm-hmm. So using technology to leverage automation created a lot of opportunity.
So what was that gentleman's name?
That his name is Ron Turner.
And is he still involved? Mm-hmm. Is he involved somehow in your business?
Yeah, he's still patient zero.
Yep.
There's a frustration that it seems like you experienced as a kid. You wanted things to move fast. You wanted to scale. You were thinking bigger at a pretty young age. How does automation help other businesses scale?
So in our business, we are definitely in a rinse and repeat cycle. We bring on triple digit shop count every month. We have an amazing team that installs the technology, goes through the setups. And then on top of that, it allows us to help this industry that really, you know, they work really hard. They work on our automobiles, which are very technologically advanced.
Uh-huh.
But however, the software that runs their businesses is really behind.
Pat, what do you got?
You said that your father was an entrepreneur and you ultimately ended up starting your own business. What's the most important thing you learned from him growing up about entrepreneurship?
Hard work. My dad would go to work every morning, 7 days a week. Come home, have dinner with us. That was really important to him. And then 7 or 8 o'clock at night, he'd go back to work.
Brian, do you have a question there? Peter?
So I want to go back to the notion of help, because I think that's so important, key to what you do. Automation's important, and, you know, rinse and repeat and return recurring revenue. But at the core of it, you're helping.
Yeah. On my whiteboard in my office says, how can I help? You know, I look at that every day when I walk in. I make sure I read it before I leave. And you know, the struggle of doing things manually, I always say that, you know, the human kind of gets in the way, because then the process doesn't go from A to Z perfectly each time. And that's where technology really lends itself, because it can help make sure that we see all the processes.
Denise,
through.
What are you thinking?
So when you were growing up, did you feel like there were some humans that got in the way when you were trying to get things done?
Yeah. I know I'm not a good employee. I don't like to do the same thing over and over again. And so, you know, just like that boss that kind of challenged me, I just kind of wanted to go around them.
Mm-hmm. Mary Pat?
Hey, Mike, when we were talking about being a DJ in the green room, I was asking you, you know, DJs, sometimes they just want to be the center of the attention, or they want to be the ones that get everybody out on the dance floor to dance. So yeah. Which are you, and how do you apply that to your business today?
At one point in my life, I definitely wanted to be the center of attention, but that's not it today. Today, it's really about our team. It's about our technology and how it helps our industry that we focus on. And we really just try to get everybody involved.
So you're bringing everybody on the team to the dance floor.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that your own annoyance at repetitive activity is what led you to automation?
Absolutely. Yeah. If there is a way to write a program so that you could just have it done, that was me. You know, whether that's an Excel spreadsheet or
so you're
else.
Your own target customer is what I'm hearing. You totally empathize because you don't like that, being in that situation.
It's funny you mention that, Christine, because a lot of the technology we build, we use on ourselves first.
Nice. Hey, you use the words that I think that guy that said you can't do anything more, he kind of dared you to do more, didn't he?
Absolutely.
What are you daring yourself or others to do now?
So that's the ultimate question. And my answer to that is, you know, be comfortable in the uncomfortable. Right. So I dare myself every day to try to reach for a new height.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? What are you talking about?
Whether that's being willing to call a prospective client or business partner and say, you know, we're not the small guy in the industry anymore.
Wait a minute. So I thought the reason that you went into business was because of money.
That's the byproduct. The real reason is I want to help.
And you want to challenge. You want to challenge yourself.
Yeah, certainly, definitely want to challenge.
Uh-huh. That's
Why do you want to help? When did that show up?
How
between the ages
you?
8 and 14?
Yeah.
When you see that, when you use that phrase, you know, people really are more welcoming. And they understand that you're actually trying to help them get somewhere else where they have some challenges today and they just can't get past them.
Who helped you when you were younger?
Definitely my father and my uncle, who was in business with him. When I got into the DJ world and started making some money, they gave me some guidance, some understanding. And I've used some business mentors over the years, and those guys have helped guide me.
So you're not the smartest guy on the team.
I am not the smartest guy on the team.
You want to bring people around you to help you out.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. How large or small is the team here?
We're now 45.
So should you be admitting on the air that you're not the smartest one around?
No, I tell people that all the time.
Really?
Absolutely.
So I guess the
Very
key
proud
is
of
getting...
It.
All right. What's the website address of your organization?
BoltOnTechnology.com.
BoltOnTechnology.com, huh? We've been speaking with Mike Risich, who's the founder and CEO of Bolt On Technology here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break.
And your name is?
Jennifer Geyer.
And who do you work for, Jennifer?
I work for Elwyn.
And what do you do for Elwyn?
I am the external relations manager.
And what does that mean exactly?
It means I help create the messages that we send out to the public.
And why do you want to send messages to the public? What do you need them to know about Elwyn?
We like to inform people in the local community and the surrounding area of what we do, the services and programs that we provide, and the help that we can offer.
People may not be aware that there is so much help in this community. You lived that firsthand in your young life. You had you have a brother. Tell us
exactly.
A little bit more about the personal connection you have with Elwyn.
Sure, I'd be happy to. My brother, Stephen, has lived here for over 30 years. He moved here when he was 11 and I was 14. And interesting that you say that. When I started working here a few years ago, I was shocked at the amount of the what I did not know about Elwyn and what went on here and the level of care that was provided.
All
I thought
things,
I did.
All the things that would offer. Why was your brother, why was he here 30 years ago?
Sure. My brother is severely mentally retarded and handicapped and nonverbal and really truly needed help round the clock with basic needs and care. And my parents realized that they could not provide that care for him. I needed a place.
You said it was the hardest day and yet the best day of your lives as
true.
A family because
yes.
finally he had a place where he could be and function and be cared for at the level he really needed. You also said it really means something to every family. That it's different. And what does it mean to you to have your brother here?
It is a real true peace of mind and a safety for our family. It is the best thing that's ever happened to us. We know that he is loved and cared for and safe. And for my parents, once they moved him here, they were able to live their lives.
And what's the website address for Elwyn?
Elwyn.org.
This has been your Business Spotlight.
Want to help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. Some of the CEOs who have appeared on our shows over the last 10 years may be willing to help you grow, assuming you're serious about your success, serious about your own success, because it all starts with the leader. If you're serious about creating your own successful business, or truly committed to putting your nose to the grindstone and doing whatever it takes to make your business successful, we may be able to match you with successful CEOs who have created millions of jobs and earned millions of dollars to help you create your success. We've established unique relationships with a unique universe of over 7,000 CEOs who have created substantial wealth for their companies, their teams, and themselves. These women and men get the build in their blood and often continue to start and build businesses even after they've created substantial wealth for themselves because they love the challenge of building a business. Perhaps we can present you and your business to some of these CEOs to gain their interest in helping you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. To hopefully match you with some of the CEOs we've had on the show for the last 10 years. mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Mike Harpster, Special Agent in Charge, Philadelphia Field Division of the FBI. Mike, what is the FBI?
So the FBI is a large organization of about 35,000 employees with about 900 here in the Philadelphia Division. We're actually the eighth largest who are sworn to protect the Constitution and American citizens.
Where are you from originally?
Boston, Massachusetts.
How many brothers and sisters?
One older brother.
Uh-huh. So you mentioned that your dad was a policeman and that also when he would get off being a policeman, he was doing a variety of different things to continue to make extra money, including paving. And that you remember going to work with him when you were 8 or 9 years old, helping him in his second or third job. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my dad used to work the midnight shifts for the police department, and he'd come home, and when I could, he would hire me on to be the roller operator or the wheelbarrow operator or anything to help them out. So
how young were you when you were doing this?
Probably 9 or 10 years old.
But didn't that stink? Your friends were outside playing, and you're like having to help your dad?
Well, sometimes he'd actually take me out of school to do it, so it was a pretty good thing, but uh-huh. for the most part, I just enjoyed working with my dad and the team of guys he had working for him. Uh-huh. They're all law enforcement as well.
Uh-huh. You mentioned that at 15, your dad opened the bar, and some interesting folks came in, and they had an interesting influence on you. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. So my dad retired from the police department, opened up a restaurant bar for about 8 years. He ran it, and I worked there, and I got to meet a whole lot of people from law enforcement, FBI, and Secret Service, and a bunch of other people that were very helpful for me moving forward.
So your dad was running this bar restaurant, and you worked in the bar restaurant, I guess?
I did, yep.
Uh-huh. And you remember serving some of these people.
Absolutely.
And you remember some conversations. Tell us about some of the conversations and interactions you had with them that were influential.
Well, a lot of them, for the federal agencies, you move around a lot. So a lot of them were probably leaving their family at home. So I had a good opportunity and chance to sit down with them, actually talk to them for an extended period of time over dinner or drinks, et cetera, where they would tell me where they've been, what their big cases were, what they had upcoming, et cetera.
How'd that influence you? How'd that affect you?
Affect me greatly to say maybe someday I want to do what they do.
Didn't you also tell us that sometimes you'd see them on TV and then you'd sit down and have dinner with them?
Yeah, that was always funny. You would go back and forth with them on what they said wrong or what they said right.
So you were hanging out with guys that were on television, that were part of the FBI and law enforcement, where you had a personal relationship with them because they were eating dinner at your dad's place or having a drink. And you got to and you really enjoyed talking with him. I mean, you weren't afraid to approach him or anything?
No, because we also play basketball together. So once you start playing sports with people, you usually have a tendency to be able to talk about anything with them. So it was very interesting to talk about. Some of them had experiences in Vietnam and other experiences they would talk about. So it was good to get that out.
Uh-huh. And tell us about what effect the town dentist had on you.
So the town I grew up in was a small town called Southborough, Massachusetts, probably about 8,000-10,000 people. There was a dentist we called Doc or Richard Hallisey. He was really a mentor to me, where he was always uplifting to me, where he would say that I was his superstar whenever I would see him, no matter what. He knew I was a cop at the time. When he would do this, and thereafter when I also became in the Bureau, he would always try to uplift me and keep me going in the right direction. He was a great support for me.
Mm-hmm. Next question. Who's got it? Mary Pat?
Mike, I've had the honor of being the daughter of a retired FBI agent, and I went through your citizens program because I always wanted to be in the FBI. But what is what do you love the most about your job and about the FBI?
The people I work with are some of the most smartest and innovative people I've ever had a chance to work with, and their dedication to the job. It's not politics. It's get the job done. Put the bad people in jail and keep America safe.
Are you proud to be an agent?
I absolutely am.
Peter?
So, Mike, you've been surrounded by law enforcement people a lot of your life, and you went from being a policeman to being an agent to protect the Constitution. That's a big jump. Tell us what made you feel expansively enough that you would make that leap.
Great question. Basically, people like Doc Halsey or other people I would work with, and then taking the test and passing it, right? So you never know until you actually do. So I did pass it, not a lot of math on it, thankfully. And then through the interviews and working my way up there, and I think a lot from the education and the people I spoke to in the past really gave me a lot of confidence that it's where I wanted to be and that I could do the job.
Mm-hmm. Brian, do you have a question there?
Yeah, what about Mom? What was she like?
So Mom was a hairstylist, a realtor, and an artist, so she had a little bit of everything going for her. She was more or less the person who would lay down the law for me. My dad, as I said, was away a lot, so although my mother would say, wait till your dad get home, we knew that probably wasn't going to happen for a while. So my mom was definitely the authoritarian and the one who took care of us mostly.
What was your own personal experience with justice at a young age?
Well, I used to run from it a lot because my father was always chasing me around in the police cruiser. But for the most part, it was good. It was a good feeling because my dad had a lot of friends, so I'd hear a lot of stories, whether it be Christmas or Thanksgiving or wherever. They were always talking about things that were going on and always had great stories that really got me encompassed in it and want to be part of it.
Mary Pat?
I was just thinking about, you know, your career, and this is one of the largest field offices in the United States. Why did they select you to run it? They mean the FBI.
Well, yeah. So the way I got selected was the director called me and going when I was driving home about a year and a half ago from the New York office, which is the largest field office. So it was a great honor for him to choose me. I hope it was based on my past experience as a leader, both as SAC in New York and the other offices that I held through Newark and a couple of terms in D.C., et cetera.
Pat?
What is it that you bring to the job every day that you learned from your dad growing up with him as a cop?
I think it's teamwork, as well as really enjoying a job. You have to enjoy your job to go through what we go through, the ups and downs, the wins, the losses, the long hours, and really have a cop sense of humor and be dedicated to that mission, Denise, which is to protect the people.
Yeah, earlier you were talking about some benefits of working with your dad on the snowplow and some of the reasons that you enjoyed that. Why don't you share a little bit about that?
So the first one was getting out of school. Usually 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning he'd pull you out, and then I know I wouldn't have to go to school the next day regardless of the conditions. But it was also being part of a team. So there'd be about 30 other operators and other trucks out there, and they would all meet shortly after or in the beginning of the storm, and you'd be able to talk to them and basically be part of a team. And I really enjoyed that. And I also enjoyed obviously helping my dad out too, having some special times with him.
Yeah, it sounds like you take your own individual responsibility, but yet you like being part of a larger team, which fits right in with the FBI.
So Mike, there was a local FBI bureau or office right near your dad's restaurant. They weren't there. They were in town for a reason. But do you remember what they wore when they came into the bar or restaurant? Did they have a shirt and tie on?
Yeah, for most part, they would wear shirt and ties all
And what
time.
Color was the shirt and what color was the tie?
Yeah, well, traditionally, Mr. Hoover would always like the white shirt. So it was white shirts and usually dark suits and probably red or ties, similar to that.
What are you wearing today?
It'd be a dark suit with a white shirt and a red tie.
And how does that make you feel?
Part of the heritage.
Mm-hmm. Next question, who's got it?
Mike, I just wanted to ask you again on the issue of protecting the Constitution. You're very passionate about it. Tell us how it makes you feel to move that mission forward.
Well, if not us, who? It's we're the last agency that really has that responsibility for looking at that, and I take that very seriously, as do the people who raise their right hand and they swear allegiance to that Constitution when they get sworn in as agents. And that's really the job, I think, that, I mean, it is what brings meaning to this job, is protecting such an instrument, the Constitution itself. I think it's very important.
Let me hear that. What brings meaning to this job is what? Let me have that again.
Protecting that Constitution. That is the piece of paper that started democracy 200 and something years ago. So to be able to protect that document, make sure it doesn't, people don't abuse that, I think it's rewarding. It's also an honor.
Did your dad, he saw you become an agent?
He did.
He's still living?
He is.
And what does he feel
today?
How
does he feel? Yeah, how does he feel about what you're doing?
Yeah, I hope he feels very proud. I think he does, because every time I see him, he's usually wearing some sort of FBI gear, shirt or hat or something to that effect. So I'm hoping it's that he feels very proud.
Do you have some of that gear for the rest of us, by the way?
We'll have a store afterwards, yes. We'll do that.
Josh?
So you talk about loving being in a team, but you're also a leader. Where do you get that leadership abilities from? Who do you get it from?
Probably sports. When I went back, I tended to always be a captain or a co-captain, whether it be football or hockey or something to that effect. I enjoy it. I enjoy being the leader of those groups and letting people actually, picking the right people for the right job and letting them do what they do well. It's very rewarding.
Very tight.
Mike, did the town dentist, did he ever see you become an agent?
He did.
And did you stay in touch with them?
I did. Unfortunately, he passed last month, but we would always go up for Christmas and Thanksgiving dinners at his house after we got transferred.
What is the website address for the FBI, Mike?
It is fbi.gov/Philadelphia. We also have a Twitter account at FBI Philadelphia.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Mike Harpster, Special Agent in Charge, Philadelphia Field Division of the FBI, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Peter, could you give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of hanging with today?
Sure, Herb. I had the great pleasure of speaking with Dr. Mike Middleman, President of Salus University, Mike Raich, Managing Director, Allen & Gerritsen, Michael Risich, Founder and CEO of Bold On Technology, and just Michael Harpster, Special Agent in Charge, Philadelphia Field Division of the FBI.
I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Brian Neary, Newmark Knight Frank, Mary Pat Kessler, Sabre Systems, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Pat Riley, Bartlett Group, Josh Silverbauer, Grew and Bleen, Denise Lance, Attentive Health, and Christine Miles, CI Squared, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. We'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.